All right, maybe just introduce yourself real quick.
Sure. I'm Trent Oster. I'm the CEO of BeamDev, and we're an Edmonton, Alberta, Canada-based developer. We've been in business since 2009.
It's a long time.
Almost 10 years now, which is kind of crazy. I had this whole master plan when I left BioWare in 2009 that I'm going to take a year off. I'm going to find myself. It'll be good. It'll be a journey of self-discovery. A week later, I'm like, I am bored. I hate this. I need to do something with my time. And I called up my business partner, Cameron, and I was like, Cam, we're going to do something. And he's like, what are we doing? I was like, I don't know, but we're going to do something. And it's going to be awesome. So we did. Started working on essentially what became BeamDog, and then we got the rights to Baldur's Gate. Baldur's Gate was kind of funny because we came out of this. It was right around when the iPad came out. And I was like, it's a big iPhone. That's really stupid. And then I realized, it's like, okay, I'm obviously not getting it. Because if I think it's just obvious and stupid, it's not.
Right.
So, iPad comes out, I buy one. I'm like, wow, this is amazing. This is going to change computing for a ton of people. Like, most people browse the internet and send emails. This will work fine for them. Second thought was, Baldur's Gate would be amazing on this. So then, pretty soon thereafter, we had the rights. We were talking about the rights to Baldur's Gate, and we closed them. It took about a year to close all the rights, and then we brought it to PC, Mac, iOS, Android, Linux, and now we're doing console. It's kind of crazy.
So how has the reaction been? People like the ports? You get a lot of old-time fans, a lot of new people?
I'm surprised by the number of new people. So I was expecting it to be pretty much hard nostalgia audience who were like, hey, I want to play the game again, but you know, I don't want to do the sit down at my desk and play it on the PC. I want it a little different. And Switch especially is appealing to a lot of people, but the new people who are coming out, they're like, hey, I've heard about this game. I'm interested in this game. It's referenced in all these greatest RPG lists. I want to know what it's about. And I play a lot of Switch stuff, so this is really appealing to me. So I think it'll be a lot of new people, but as well, I think a lot of our audience, our older audience, also has Switch.
Sure. Do you think the Baldur's Gate game showing up on so many best of lists kind of helps you a bit?
I think it has. I mean, people look at it
and
they're
always
like, it's a reference point.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, if you want to be an informed gamer and you want to be able to talk about what people think some of the best RPGs ever were, this is one of them. When actually in the whole package, there's Baldur's Gate 2, Planescape Torment.
Yep.
Two always appear in all the top 10 lists.
So I guess one of the big things you guys did was that new expansion for Baldur's Gate.
Yeah, Siege of Dragonspear.
Yeah.
So really, kind of saw this big gap there. It's like, okay, Baldur's Gate 1 ends with you, the hero of Baldur's Gate, rah rah, everything's good. Baldur's Gate 2, literally it's an opening cinematic that says, you left Baldur's Gate under dark circumstances. And we're like, let's dig into that. What are dark circumstances that would force you to leave Baldur's Gate? So we dug into it and put together the Siege of Dragonspear storyline. We had kind of a fairly small plan for it, and then it just kept growing and growing and growing, and every time we grew it, we added more bugs, and then we fixed more bugs, and then we went back to it. I played it, and I'm like, so this part plays really good, and then there's this empty part, and then there's the other part. We need to fix the empty part. So we fixed it out, and eventually we wound up with the full expansion. And some people are huge fans of it. Some people are less, it's not iconic, it's not part of the original story arc, but if you were to create that, you probably couldn't get closer to the original DNA than we had. So.
Is that something you'd like to do again in the future?
You know, I think it's time to do something new.
Yeah.
I think we've done what we came to do with Baldur's Gate. Neverwinter Nights, I think we still have a bit more work to do, specifically around the renderer. I think the new render, the dropping the new renderer and bringing it to console, I'm going to feel pretty good about where Neverwinter's at when we're done that. So, hey, it's time to do something new. What that is, I mean, we've got Axis and Allies going, so that's another kind of my 12-year-old fantasy thing. I was a huge D&D nerd, and I was a huge Axis and Allies nerd, so 12-year-old me would think I'm pretty cool. And after Axis and Allies, I think there's a lot of opportunities. We're just trying to figure out which is the right one.
So my big question for Neverwinter Nights on console is, are you going to be supporting a lot of like the player-made content?
We're trying to figure out exactly how to do it so that people can download and play mods solo. So as far as being able to connect to any server and jump in and play online worlds and even play custom content worlds, so we've got NWSync, which is basically, it's a tool that allows you to go in and when you build your content, you're able to upload it to a third-party location where we can access it. And then when you're playing the game, when you join to that server, it just auto-pulls down that content. So you can jump in, and with us redoing the renderer is going to open up so much in terms of possibilities. Because Cameron, my business partner, when he rewrote it, he's like, the original renderer was really fixed. It was a fixed function pipeline based on that era of renderers and what hardware could do in that era, whereas now everything's shader-based. So he's like, rather than go in and make another hard-coded shader or a hard-coded render approach, I'm going to create this concept of techniques. So you define a render technique, and a technique can hold passes. And you can throw in as many techniques and passes as you want. So what'll be neat is we'll build kind of the default, ship that out, and then see what people do with it.
Excellent.
Like some of the passes are like, oh, I want soft shadows. Okay, soft shadows can be done. Here's the technique. Here's the pass. Here's how you do soft shadows on a pass. Oh, I want to build the whole thing as a deferred renderer. So it defers all the stuff to the end, sends it to the video card once, way more efficient. Our technical artist, Johnny, did it in, it's like 4 days.
Wow.
Yeah, he's like, I'm going to make this deferred.
Ring.
New technique, deferred. Done. It's pretty cool.
Very cool.
Johnny's pretty hardcore, though. And I think there will be this whole class of modders who literally build shaders and techniques and passes and kind of come up with this way of doing things that'll then get shared out among the community and spread. It's just like Neverwinter of old. And we're plugged in with the community pretty hard. And we've got them helping us right now, kind of testing out render path and new techniques. So it's going to be fun.
That's pretty exciting because there were already lots of crazy things that people did with the original games. Very cool to see.
Part of the appeal of Neverwinter was all that user-created content.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's why I was so excited about it when we first started making Neverwinter. Like, I started as the project director for Neverwinter at BioWare with one sentence, and that sentence was everything in the D&D box. And 5 years later, we had a game. 2 years after that, we shipped the second expansion, and then it was in the wild. And it's still got a community 10-plus years later.
Yeah, it's amazing to see the longevity of those games.
It was a combination of the accessibility of the tool set, and then as well the popularity of, hey, I want to have my own micro MMO that my friends can play with me that has our own custom rules, our own custom setting. And if you're really into, like, I want the Total Draw Simulator, there might not be that many people into it. It might not be a commercially viable product, but as a modder, you can make that and share that with your friends, and it's for you, it's the best game ever. And it's the most amazing thing, and no one could ever produce that on a commercial scale.
No.
And to me, that's the most powerful thing about Neverwinter.
Absolutely.
It's really that democratization of game design. I still love that idea. I still love it. I just wish tools were easier to make.
Yeah.
When we developed the tool set originally, we actually budgeted 3 entire months to redo the UI, knowing that our first version of it would be horrible. It's like, this, we'll make something that allows you to make areas and place characters and do all the things, but it's going to suck. So understand we're going to have to replace it. And like now we're going through the tool set. We're kind of updating a lot of things. It was originally designed around pretty small screens real estate. Now you're running it on a 4K display. Yeah. It'll come up pretty quick here. New compile on it. It's a lot more big screen friendly. A lot of new options, a lot of new... really, optimization is making it a lot better.
That's very good news. I tried to mess around with it a lot back in the day and had trouble. So
it was. It was a lot of fun, and I mean, a lot of people were like, "Whoa, dude, you're like sharing your whole tool set, and you're sharing all the source content for all the modules you made." And we're like, "Yeah." but aren't you scared that people are going to make better stuff than you can? I was like, "Well, I'm supposed to be professional. If the amateurs cannot perform us,
we should hire the amateurs and fire the professionals. So in the end, we actually did that. We wound up hiring a lot of the guys out of the community.
Oh, cool.
Like, that was, at Bioware, that was kind of the standard. It's like, oh, you want to be a designer at Bioware? Where's your Neverwinter mod? Oh, I don't have one. Well, you should have one. And then we had a couple, Georg Zoller from Germany and Yaron Jacobs from Israel. They applied, they sent their mods in, our guys looked at them, and they're like, holy shit, I don't know how they did that. I don't know if we know how to do that. We should hire these guys, and we did. And they were rock solid guys for years at that company. And it's something we continue to do. We hire a lot out of the community. It just makes a ton of sense.
I'm sure that's great to hear for a lot of people that like slave over these mods and try and make something amazing that, you know, that could actually lead to a profession. Which is good.
Well, making games is hard.
Yeah.
And a lot of it is just banging your face against a new mobile object until stuff works. And if you're willing to do that, you're willing to go through that level of commitment, and you're willing to learn how to do it, it's valuable.
Yeah. So I have noticed that there's two of those old D&D games missing.
Okay.
Neverwinter Nights 2 and Icewind Dale 2.
It's Icewind Dale 2 we can't find the source code to.
Really?
It's just lost. So Black Isle doesn't have it. All our friends who are over at Obsidian, we've asked. Everybody's dug through hard drives. Nobody's been able to chase it up.
It's
just missing. And Neverwinter 2... Two is kind of in an odd place. I mean, especially now that Microsoft's acquired Obsidian, I'm not sure where the rights totally sit with it.
Right.
And Neverwinter is my baby. Neverwinter 2 is like a weird cousin of my baby. And I'm like, I don't know if I trust you, weird cousin. You took some of my beautiful design decisions and you just trashed them and restarted. And you're like, I want to create this Neverwinter Baldur's Gate hybrid thing. And I was like, no, Neverwinter should be Neverwinter. It should be played like I play in pen and paper D&D. I play my one character. I could have a henchman or two, yes, but I play the main character. I concentrate on that character. Whereas Baldur's Gate is, I'm playing as this meta unit that can control this whole party. It's much more of a... Baldur's Gate is much more of a novel that you're playing by controlling the adventuring group as they play through the adventure. Whereas Neverwinter is, I am that character playing through a module, hopefully with friends. If not, I'm playing it solo with some companions. So, I think on a conceptual level, Neverwinter 2 always felt a little odd to me.
I suppose if you make the modding tools for Neverwinter Nights 2, or Neverwinter Nights good enough, someone can just make Neverwinter Nights 2.
There's some crossover. Like, that's one of the things that scares me, is I'm not sure where it starts and where it ends. And the answer is usually way worse than we expect. At least that's been my experience with code so far. So it's... I mean, it's there as a possibility. I haven't dug into it too hard, but I kind of really feel it's time to do something new. I mean... Our goal with redoing the old games was, one, make great games. Two, almost be like museum curators. Take care of a beloved property, fix the broken things. Like, oh, this is an old painting, it's a little dusty, frame's broken in one spot, oh, it hasn't got the love it needs. Okay, let's square it up, let's fix the mechanicals, let's dress it up, let's get rid of the dust and make it so people can experience it and enjoy it today.
Sure.
And it really became kind of an important thing. And just preserving the history of gaming. I had no thoughts about it initially, but now it's kind of become a thing for us. So I feel like we've really done what we set out to do, and it's been great, but I think it's time to create something new.
Well, that's exciting to hear. I'm sure lots of people are going to be waiting to see what you do next.
I'm waiting to see what it's doing. There's one of the things about working with the big RPGs like Baldur's Gate, we've spent like the last 6 years elbows deep in the guts of some of the most beloved RPGs. We know how those quests are made. We know how those systems are made. And part of the love for Baldur's Gate is just the depth of simulation of second edition D&D rules, which are complex.
Oh, yeah.
So it's understanding the level of care and thoughtfulness that goes in. It really gave us an understanding of kind of what's a sacred cow, what really matters to the fans, and what's kind of a sacrificial goat. Like a spell sequencer or a contingency. it's important that it fires off when you expect. It does what you expect in terms of firing multiple spells, but the criteria that kick it off, in pen and paper, it's wide open. Obviously, in a computer game, we can't do that. We've got to shrink it down and shrink the possible list. That's a sacrificial goat. We can sacrifice some of those costs, some of those choice options. But in return, the sacred cow is, spells better go off than I put in that. It better work like it's supposed to. So it's really a good experience for us, kind of taking a new team and training them up and really exposing them to how some of the greatest RPGs ever were made. And so now it's time to do something new. Take those key learnings and hopefully avoid some of the original mistakes and step in the right direction.
Excellent.
And, I mean, right now, we've got a chance to work with Skybound. They're a great partner. And they're so creator-focused. It just lines up with us. We're developer first and foremost. We make games. We have a portal so we can sell our games directly to our fans. And Skybound being as creator-focused as they are, it's just a perfect match. It makes so much sense. It's like we almost finish each other's sentences.
So you're going to bring all these games to retail, right?
Yep.
That's crazy to think. All these
I know.
Later, you're
going
to be able to walk into a store and pick up Baldur's Gate again.
I know. If people were pitching me, like, so you're going to walk into the store and there's going to be a disc with Baldur's Gate on it sitting there. I was like, you are a funny man and you tell good stories. But I'm going to slowly back away now. Whereas it's happening.
Yeah.
And there's an audience that's excited about it from a nostalgia standpoint. And there's an audience that's excited about it from a, hey, I get to go in and play this game I've heard so much about and be conversant about it.
Yeah. I mean, I remember years ago trying to replay Baldur's Gate before you guys came along. It was pretty rough.
Well, it was like you grabbed the game from GOG, you went and you downloaded a ton of mods. You ran WeDo, you hopefully installed them all in the correct order or shit blew up. And if you finally got the order right, then you got it running. Well, it didn't run quite perfectly. There was, screen real estate's not exactly what I want, so.
I was even worse off. I had the Mac version.
Oh, you are the most unloved.
Yeah.
That version was.
Yeah.
Oh, it was Mac Play that did that. And then, when we came back to it, we basically reported everything essentially to Linux. It was kind of our core first platform for all the Baldur's Gate stuff. And then from Linux, Mac is a short hop. So it worked out well.
Yeah, it's just going to be exciting to go pick up Baldur's Gate from the store again. I remember one of the first major PC games I got was like going into a new, brand new Apple store that opened up and picking up Baldur's Gate 2.
So that's awesome.
It's going to be cool to do that again.
I remember getting our boxes when we shipped it out. We went through the office and they handed them out to each person. We were like, I had played the game when we were making it, and I was like, I think it's good. I think. But I'm not sure. When I got my box, at that point I'm like, okay, I'm going to commit to a playthrough. I'm not going to open my box. I'll set it aside, but I'm going to play through it. So I played through it, and I was like, wow. We hit some really awesome moments in there. This is actually pretty solid. It's probably the most D&D feeling game I've played. And apparently a few other people thought the same.
I think for many people it's still the best D&D game.
It really touches. It touches all the bases. And I mean, I love that D&D has such a rich history.
Yeah.
You've got a game like Baldur's Gate that so many people have enjoyed, and it's their vector into the game, and it's still available. You can go out and buy it today, and it's going to work on almost any platform on the planet. Because of a bunch of silly people who can't say no to platforms. Let's put it on this. Why not?
All right, last question. Have you had any people that have only played the newer rule sets come to you confused about going back and playing the older version?
Oh, yeah. People are like, Thaco. Tell me about Thaco. And you're like, Thaco was created by Satan. He was trying to confuse you so that you would be susceptible to his charms later in life. But a lot of people come in, especially now with 4th or 5th edition experience, and they look back at the game and they're like, I don't really get the rules. But at the same time, I've met a bunch of people who played it in the first place,
sure,
who never played D&D, and who they didn't understand the second edition rules, but they kind of grokked what was happening. They kind of got how to play what the game and go through it without ever really understanding the full rule set. So I think you've got that opportunity where people have learned a newer rule set, just go back and just have the raw experience. As well, I think there's a decent number of kind of translators out there now that explain, okay, you know 5th Ed, this is what 2nd Ed is to 5th Ed.
Yeah.
This is how they map roughly, and this is the crazy shit, so just trust us on this.
Here's everything about Thaco.
Yeah, here's everything about Thaco, and here's how thief skills kind of work.
All right, well, thank you very much.